ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Konnichiwa, Frank Helly here, fresh from a holiday in Japan. And there's something special about escaping the everyday, isn't there? Diving headlong into a new culture, seeing the same sky but a different view, realising what makes us all the same but different. And that's precisely what we offer on the Radio National Hour. Every weekday, you'll hear stories that surprise you. You'll meet people that make the news and make you think. So next time you feel like exploring the world, just search for the Radio National Hour right here on ABC Listen.
The NDIS is about to be slashed, but what tool will the government use to figure out who gets to stay and who doesn't? Today we speak to Martin Laverty, an architect of the scheme and now head of Aruma, a disability services provider, about what to expect, and to Jess Howlett, who has autism, about her fears she'll be unfairly removed. I'm Sam Hawley on Gadigal Land in Sydney. This is ABC News Daily. Jess, you've been on the NDIS over the last few years. Just tell me, what have you relied on it for? What do you receive?
I can't tell you how much it's changed my life. So in my plan, I get funding for occupational therapy and psychology. The occupational therapy helps me with day-to-day things, and they're basically strategists and problem solvers for your specific collection of needs, which is amazing to have a professional understand how your sensory profile, emotional needs, everything else tie in together and actually use what you do to help you. And a psychologist who helps me so much with my social skills, emotional regulation, sensory regulation, and understanding, especially because I just go along with anything. I'm very much a yes person because I don't understand what's okay, what is okay to say no to and what's not, which no one realizes. I also get core funding, which can be used across sort of a few different areas, including the social participation. Mostly I use that budget for support workers and cleaners.
Okay, so in 2021 you were actually diagnosed with level 2 autism. Is that a late diagnosis for you, and how did you come across it?
Yeah, well, it was a very late diagnosis for me. I think I was 27 at the time. I've had issues in so many different sections since I was a teenager and been bounced around from doctor to doctor to try and figure out what's going on and never been able to hold down a job. And then I was helping out at the op shop a couple of days with my mum, and one of her co-workers mentioned that she is autistic and that she had noticed some traits in me. So I went into it, and the deeper I got, the more everything resonated for me. And for once, I finally, something made sense about me. It costs a fortune to get a diagnosis. You don't get diagnosed as a trend. This is not something you can do lightheartedly. It's thousands of dollars and months to do it. I got diagnosed in early July 2021.
So do you think once the changes come in to the NDIS that you will continue to receive the support you have been receiving in the past few years?
I hope and pray every day that when the changes come in, I will still be able to stay on the NDIS. I fear that it's very, very likely that I will be in the first group kicked off, because at the end of the day, autistic people are getting targeted, especially level 2 and level 1. invisible illnesses in general are nowhere near as recognized as physical disabilities. It doesn't have to be external for it to have a very significant impact on my daily ability.
All right, well, Jess, as you said, you're really worried that you will be kicked off the NDIS. Yeah. Now, the government says there will be other programs for people who get diverted off. Do you feel confident in any way that you will get the support you need somewhere else if that was the outcome?
I don't feel confident at all. If I was able to access this support without the NDIS, I absolutely would be. I can't afford the supports that I have now, pretty much none of them. And though you can get care plans from the GPs, they only last like 10 weeks or something. Autism doesn't go away after 10 weeks. That's not how disabilities work. OT and psych, they're both around $200 for an hour-long appointment. I've heard them say a lot recently that there were supports back before the NDIS, and that the NDIS now, people, instead of going to those supports, have just gone on the NDIS. That's completely incorrect. There were no supports. If there were, they simply weren't available to everyone. You don't get to choose if you're born with a disability or if you have a disability. We don't choose that. And anyone in this world can become disabled and need to rely on the NDIS at any point in your life. It could happen tomorrow.
G'day, I'm Dr. Martin Laverty. I'm the Chief Executive of Aruma, which is one of the nation's largest not-for-profit disability organisations, and I was also honoured to be part of establishing the NDIS and served on its board for 8 years.
Martin, 160,000 people are about to be kicked off the NDIS, so what I want to do with you is have a look at how the government will determine who gets to stay and who goes. In your view, the system was in part flawed because a person's diagnosis isn't necessarily tied to their functional capacity. Now, you've given an example of a person you know with Down syndrome. So just explain that.
I'm going to give an illustration of two people that I know really well. One person I've known my entire life. Both of them have Down syndrome, both roughly the same age. One person's functional capacity is significantly impaired. This person lives in 24-hour accommodation. They're now experiencing deteriorating health. There is no doubt that in the future the NDIS will be there for this person. Now, the other person, roughly the same age, same diagnostic condition, works, lives independently, has their license, is truly engaging in the social activities of their local community. Now, Sam, there's been a whole lot of family involvement, and the social support for this person over decades has been immense, but it's not necessarily involved the contribution of the taxpayer. So I'm arguing that it needn't be diagnosis that is the entry point to the NDIS. Instead, getting back to the original idea of the Productivity Commission to assess the functional impairment to determine eligibility, and then to determine what's the right volume of support needs to determine the size of a participant's plan.
Okay, so when everyone on the NDIS has to reapply to determine whether or not they can stay on it, they are the sort of questions that will be asked. Just tell me about a tool that could be used here. You've looked at the World Health Organization test on this. How would that work?
Well, Sam, we have to acknowledge first a stunning information vacuum. Minister Butler has announced that there will be a functional capacity assessment tool to apply from about 2028. But today we don't know what that tool is. We don't know how it will operate.
I'm terms of eligibility, that is something obviously we need to work through much more carefully with the community and with states. We want to have that work supported by a technical advisory group. Over the coming months, we will work on an objective assessment tool, and I would expect that to be in place for 2028. Now, that will govern entry to the scheme, in my expectation, from the 1st of January 2028, and will be the tool that governs reassessment of people, which happens at the end of their plans.
So I'm really concerned that there's hundreds of thousands of people with disability today that just don't know how this is going to work, and that's creating extraordinary uncertainty.
Mm.
So let's try and piece together what might happen.
Mm-hmm.
The World Health Organization's Disability Assessment Schedule, known as the HUDAS, it's been around for some years. It looks at six different areas to assess a person's functional impairment. And those six areas are the cognition, looking at mobility, the ability to self-care, communication, participation in normal life activities, and social engagement. Now, it's likely that this HUDAS or a HUDAS adaption could be used to assess the functional capacity to determine eligibility for the scheme.
Mm-hmm.
There will also need to be a tool to then determine what types of supports are also required. So the HUDAS might look at eligibility, but you then might use the Instrument for Classification and Assessment of Support Needs, or the ICANN version 6, to determine a person's package. Now, it's very similar to the HUDAS, but it actually maps the needs of the person to support. So again, it's looking at mobility, domestic life, community engagement, learning, the ability to undertake tasks. And for government, it's able to set parameters to determine how many people will become eligible and the types of support needs that the NDIS would fund.
Okay, but put simply, these tools, they'll determine how much someone's disability affects their daily life, their functional capacity.
As the Productivity Commission originally intended, that it should be a functional capacity assessment rather than the existence of a diagnosis that triggers eligibility for the scheme.
All right. Well, Martin, what would be your message for people currently on the NDIS who are really worried right now that they will not meet this new criteria, but they really do rely heavily on the assistance that they've been provided?
Sam, Aruma supports about 5,500 people with disabilities every day. Since the announcements of NDIS reforms last week, I've been inundated with the uncertainty that those supported by Aruma are feeling about the future. It's not clear to those that I am closest to, and for those families, those mums and dads of children in particular, this uncertainty really regrettably is going to continue for upwards of 18 months, 2 years. I urge the government to, as soon as possible, make clear the direction about how the functional capacity assessment is going to be made, how will the support needs assessments be made, what does that mean for the individuals in the NDIS today? But really importantly, to work constructively with the state governments. The state governments are quite right to be pushing back, saying you're passing an uncertain burden without the resources to embed new services. Well, that's not acceptable. We've got to find a way for state, territory and the federal governments to make sure programs are in place before these changes are implemented. Otherwise, we will see people with genuine need at risk of being stranded without services that they need.
Martin Laverty is the Chief Executive of Disability Accommodation and Services Provider, Aruma, a I also spoke with Jess Howlett, who has level 2 autism. This episode was produced by Sydney Peed. Audio production by Sam Dunn. Our supervising producer is David Cody. I'm Sam Hawley. Thanks for listening.